Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from across the globe to share their expertise, their insights, and their thoughts on building businesses. And on this episode, I have the pleasure of having Russ Abadjit from Radiant Hub, and we'll be talking all things, including team building, standing out, authority building, exiting, valuations, and all things build around that. So if those are any interest to you in building your business, stick around to the very end. My name is Gary Lafferty. I am the CEO and founder of the Growth Focus Partnerships, where we partner with tech companies across the globe to help them transform from experts to the authority in their network. So without further ado, Russ, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here today. Why don't we start with you introducing yourself and what you and your company does?
Yeah, thank you, Gary. It's a pleasure to be here. As you said, my name is Russ Abadjit. I'm a founder and president, or I should say co-founder and president of Radiant Hub. We're a Salesforce certified consultancy based out of and headquartered out of Indianapolis, Indiana.
Fantastic, fantastic. So tell us, what is it that you actually do and who do you actually serve predominantly?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we have four defined verticals. We serve independent software vendors doing application development. We serve construction field service organizations. We serve nonprofits, which we're very proud of. And a new vertical for us is healthcare life sciences. So any customer within those vertical markets using or considering the Salesforce platform are a target audience for us.
Brilliant, brilliant. So we're going to dive a little bit more deeper into, you know, what makes you different and your core offering in a little bit later on. But I'm going to sort of dial it back to you first, because obviously, you obviously didn't start as an entrepreneur. You know, you had a great career before. What was it that inspired you to go from transitioning from working for others to co-founding your own company?
Yeah, so I think to understand that, I have to go back to my first opportunity to work in the Salesforce ecosystem. I've been in the technology space my entire career, so 20 plus years of doing sales, business development, program management, and technology. And about 14 years ago, I was offered an opportunity to be the VP of sales and to start a CRM practice for an organization, a boutique consultancy. And you asked me what inspired me. I was chasing title. I was looking for moving upward mobility, right? I was looking at money. All things now I can reflect on and say, okay, those were the reasons why, maybe not the best decisions, but that was the reality of what I was doing. I was nervous. I was scared. I was new to CRM. And a president of a small boutique consultancy, much like mine today, gave me an opportunity to be a leader. And 5 years later, we took this thing from the ground up, went from 0 to 7 million. And it, Gary, was, it was the ride of my life. And as I mentioned earlier, as I reflect back, it built and was given me all the tools necessary to one day, and in February, we'll turn 5 years old, one day to start, launch, and be the leader of a technology consultant. That excited me extremely at the time. It was a little bit scary, but after starting four other Salesforce consultancies with other firms, I got the bug to say, why not start my own? Why not take everything I've learned from the organizations I've worked for before, the good parts, and incorporating them into my business, but also do things differently? Organizations don't always do things well, and I thought I could build my own consultancy, build the team from the ground up, be strong leader and have that opportunity to do that. And that really excited me.
Which is fantastic. And I love what you say. It's all about the excitement of going in. And we tend to forget that when we get down a few years of entrepreneurship and running our businesses, we tend to forget how we felt when we first started. And it is, wow, we've actually, and it's a whole plethora of emotions, isn't it? It's like, I've done this for so many people now, they're making the money, I'm not making the money. So we've got this, the little bit of anger about that. And then we've got the excitement of doing it on our own. But you had a little bit more excitement because we work back the figures, 5 years is going to put us just before the pandemic, isn't it? So you started your company just before the pandemic. Let's talk about that. And How does excitement turn into fear that drives you and your insights from that?
Well, you can imagine the conversations with my wife. I first had to let her know that I was leaving my job and going to start my own business. And there's a lot of apprehension and fear, uncertainty and doubt built into that. And then, February 9th, 2020 is our birthday, right? And if you remember what it was like February, I mean, that was right on the edge of the pandemic. So at the time, there was a lot of fear. In fact, my business partner, co-founding partner I mentioned earlier, his name's Doug Porter. He was still working when we started the organization, and we weren't really going to take off until we were in a good enough place where he could leave his job and commit 100% to Radiant Hub. But I do look back on it. It was scary. Nobody was purchasing. If they were purchasing, the net terms instead of 15 or 30 were 45 or 60 days out on payments, which for a small company was a killer. And they certainly weren't hiring new organizations to do business with. Like it was a really apprehensive time in our, it was the start of our company, but a time in general in the global economy. And I will tell you this, looking back on it, we learn a lot from being able to look back on something. It was a blessing in disguise. It forced me to slow things down. It forced me to hire the business partners that would later do our health insurance, be our fiduciary, be our backbone for HR, PEO. It allowed me to do that. It allowed me to find the right accounting firms, the right lawyers to help us with contracts and things of that nature. So it really slowed us down. It allowed us to build our sales process as a two-person organization. It allowed me to do all kinds of, what people were doing during the pandemic? They wanted to talk. They didn't want to buy, but they wanted to talk. So what we're doing right now, I did loads and loads and loads of that for the first 4 months until we became operational in June of 2020.
Yeah.
But had I not had that forced position to slow things down, I would have done what I think any normal salesperson, business development person would have, which is just sell, sell, sell. And the reality was we weren't ready for business on day one. We were ready for business about 4 months later, once we had done all that research and put all our partnerships together.
And I think that's a fantastic lesson. I mean, just listening to you about that, not very often we hear the value of slowing down and not missing all the pieces. You know, if you're driving at 100 miles an hour, you're just missing some of the vital things that you really need to be doing. And the pandemic gave you that time, which is fantastic from that. So that being said, and I love what you said earlier about, they didn't want to buy, but they did want to talk. And that's a great way because it allows you to build those relationships from the very beginning. And I suppose have a very good, solid foundations, because if you know they're not buying, you don't have to push them. It's just literally about building those relationships. So, but that being said, Salesforce consultancies appear to be very similar, right? They're all very, very similar out there. Salesforce is Salesforce. People's perception of Salesforce is pretty much uniform. So how does Radiant Hub differentiate itself? What have you learned over the last few years to differentiate from such a noisy, crowded market?
Yeah, that's a great question. Again, I have started four other Salesforce practices. I've been doing sales and business development a lot of my career. So I had the interesting perspective of selling projects. And this is where the consultant industry falls down from time to time. You sell these projects and the client has a certain expectation that's not met. So you do a change order, you have scope creep, and you keep throwing money at this problem. And what really didn't happen is from day one on the project, we didn't set the right expectations. I was just chasing the sale, right? So now I get a fast forward. Radiant Hub's my own company, and I want to put our fingerprints on it. And so I say to myself, how can we eliminate that? And where I think we differentiate ourselves is from day one, we do complimentary discovery workshops to get a scope of work to find out what our clients are trying to do. But we educate them all along that process. I say, hey, Gary, look, what we're putting together right now probably is a four-phased project and it's got a price tag of X. we can do what you're initially looking for, and here are the business results or the outcomes that you're looking for in a smaller version in phase one. But I need you to know that most of our clients do not start this journey without subsequent phases or having an internal knowledge base internally to be able to optimize the solution. So I guess to answer your question in general is I'm no longer sales. Everything I do is sales for the company, right? But I'm no longer leading our sales department. So as the leader of the company, what I'm looking for is clients who are thrilled with the deliverables we give them, thrilled with the outcomes, can see tangible value in what my firm brought to the table, and that from most of the time wanted to continue doing business with us. And it seems super simple, but I find that salespeople are always cycling through. Leadership is always cycling through. Everybody's looking to go from where they are to the next step. And I have this unique position as a leader, as the president now, to say, no, let's just do it proper from day one. And let's try to set the right expectations with our customers and then deliver that. And it's a very simple recipe. But in our industry, there are good consultants. There are a lot of them out there. And I admire and respect a ton of them. I learn from them. But there's also a lot of organizations that are just looking to churn numbers and churn sales.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, breaking down a little bit again of what you were saying there is that, you know, the educational part of prospect today is not just the case of just selling the product or the service anymore. Where the power comes from, what people are really looking for from the insights that we see today, is the educational part, helping them buy. Because a lot of people, they're probably buying this once every 5 years or once every few years. And so they're not on the cusp of buying all the time. So helping people and educating them, like you said, doing these discovery workshops, educating them, showing them what they need to be doing, explaining the stages that you're doing. And the biggest point, the biggest reason for disappointment is misaligned expectations. And you're setting those expectations out right from the very, very beginning, which is absolutely fantastic. So that being said, go on. Russ.
Could I just, if you may, just to add on top of that, I mentioned we work in the nonprofit sector as one of our strong verticals, and we're very proud of that. Gary, I understand that some of these decision makers, especially in a nonprofit that doesn't have a lot of money, budgets are really tough, right? They have small IT departments, and their constituents are people, or their product is serving, you know, people. We'll sit down and have conversations with them because I know that this junior or maybe young senior level person making this decision, this is a career making decision for them. Like this could make or break a promotion, a bonus, a step in their journey. And we're part of that equation, a huge part of that. If we fail that by not setting those proper expectations, we're affecting people's careers and lives. And we take that that's the level of conversations we have with our prospects before they become clients.
Yeah, absolutely. And how powerful that really is, that, like you said, it's beyond the service, beyond the product itself. This is working hand in hand, the part of the equation, partnership, we'll call it what you like, but bringing together and moving forward as one. And I think the more people can do that, the better off everybody will be, the consumers, the suppliers, the resellers, all of them will be far better off if they can move as one, as opposed to two different teams trying to outbid each other. So I want to talk about something which we talked about off camera, tip of the spear. You know, you'll always, this is a phrase that you coined and you mentioned to me when we were talking off camera. How do you ensure, you've obviously built and grown multiple other consultancies by using this tip of the spear, being right at the very top. So how does Radiant Hub stay ahead of the curve? There's always new products and services coming in from Salesforce. How do you stay ahead of that curve, making sure that you're relevant, the products and services you're offering is relevant to the people that you serve?
Yeah, that's a great question. And having done this for 14, 15 years in the Salesforce ecosystem, if you think back 14, 15 years ago, Salesforce was still big, but it wasn't the behemoth and market leader that it is today. And so I do have the knowledge of being able to look back and watching how Salesforce itself has climbed throughout the years and what their go-to-market strategies are. And the one thing we can say for certain is that they'll continue to innovate. They'll continue to make acquisitions that spread the breadth of their products into different segmentations. And also understanding when a giant company makes an acquisition, of a certain product, it takes them a while to incorporate that acquisition into their go-to-market strategy and to really unify things into how Salesforce does business. So I learned learned this from other leaders that were willing to mentor and share information with me, but we would watch the acquisitions, right? And then we learned it would take aggressively 2 years, you know, conservatively 4 years for a company like Salesforce to really, again, swallow the acquisition. So what we would do is a small consultancy, right? How are we going to fight against the big Accentures, Deloitte's, Emphasis? And we don't want to be them, but we do like what they're doing and the solutions they're solving for their clients. So what we try to do is we watch the roadmap for Salesforce. And if they have an acquisition, we immediately try to get smart on that acquisition, whether it be ExactTarget or MuleSoft or new product innovations like Agentforce and with artificial intelligence. So the moment they start publicizing that stuff, the moment they start talking about it, the moment they have enablement courses, as a small consultancy, we shift and we take a core group of team members to get become subject matter experts on that. And that allows us to talk aggressively and confidently about the solutions that Salesforce will be marketing themselves. They're great at marketing, so why not run off the backs of their their advertising and things like that? So we just invest early in emerging technology because we know it's going to be there in 6 months to a year anyways.
Yeah, what a great philosophy to have. They're the early adopters rather than saying, "Hey, we're experiencing this." If you're dealing with something like Salesforce, who are always acquiring new things for their own growth, you can be, by the time it is launched publicly and more people know about it, you're already the early adopter, you're the expert, you're the authority on that, and you probably more than likely primed your ideal customers on that, so they're ready for it, and it just makes sense now when they're hearing other people talk about it, but you're the preferred supplier of that. So that being a great strategy alongside Salesforce swallowing up these other things, expanding their breadth of this, there's going to be a very strong emphasis on strategic alliances, who you know, partnerships, things like that. And I know strategic alliances and partnerships, co-selling opportunities and models has been a cornerstone of your growth. What advice would you give those who are listening here and other founders on building high-value partnerships?
Yeah, I've been working with our marketing agency. And, you know, my thought process in going into that, working off your question here, was, you know, we would focus all of our efforts on our B2B business to business model, our go to market strategy. And we took a step back and started looking at our partnerships, our relationships. And actually, we came to realize that our biggest audience isn't necessarily our set of prospects and customers. Our biggest audience is the team of Salesforce account executives, the team of Salesforce regional vice presidents, area vice presidents that we're co-selling with. They have thousands of Salesforce certified partners to work with globally, right? But what we wanted to do is create this digital content, really create this co-selling model where we're working with the people who are also trying to sell to the exact same customer set. And so this also is where I have an advantage from my history of working in the Salesforce ecosystem for so long. The model, the recipe, the blueprint, whatever you want to call it, it hasn't changed. You form really good relationships with, you know, let's say 40, 50 account executives, a handful of RVPs, a handful of AVPs. You deliver, you help the co-sell model, help them get to a sale. You deliver the solution. You get good customer satisfaction. You get good clients. And rinse and repeat and rinse and repeat. And once you form that relationship, Gary, they don't assume you're perfect. Not every implementation goes as smoothly as we'd like, right? My experience is it's how you recover from that that's important. But I've just found it super critical. We've diverted almost all of our marketing efforts as a small company into building those relationships with the people we co-sell with, which is Salesforce account executives.
Yeah. So that's a really good point because there's other suppliers and other resellers and other, we've spoken through over the course of this podcast series. And one of their challenges was that they would say that building these relationships with the internals is a waste of time because they are more than likely going to go to the big names over time. Because they're trained to go to the big names because that's where they'll get the best training. I noticed earlier on you said, hey, we build up these relationships and it is a win-win for all. What is that slight difference that you're bringing to the table? Why these vice presidents would work with you as opposed to the guarantee of the big boys and the big names out there?
Yeah. So the first thing I've done, and I've done this about with every Salesforce consultancy I've helped start or started. And the first is I acknowledge where the big boys are and that we don't want to be them, right? So we tuck ourselves in right behind them in the light enterprise upper mid-market space. So now our audience, those RVPs, those account executives, now our audience knows that, you know, to get Accenture or Deloitte involved, it's got to be a $500,000 project or above or whatever their magic, you know, line is. So the first thing we do is we tuck ourselves in behind them where it's less crowded and we don't try to compete in that, enterprise or upper enterprise space. So now our audience is... Now our audience is very focused. They don't have to just work with the big ones. They can work with a consultancy like us. But then quickly after that, we have to show them that we can help them close. They're salespeople. We have to help them.
Exactly.
We can close deals quicker, or we can bring value to the deal. So what we do is we're a very technical organization. We pride ourselves on our designs, our discovery workshops. We've proven to those account executives that not only are we good at helping them close deals faster, but in fact, we have the same skill sets they have internally as far as solution engineers, things we can bring to the table to add value. Organizations like Salesforce are huge. So to get a really good solutions engineer, a high value solutions engineer on a call or engaged in a sales cycle is hard to do. So we help fill gaps where we identify where they have gaps and then try to fill them with our people. And then just inherently, you know, things start coming together really nicely and working together becomes a relationship thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I want to dive something because you just mentioned something there, which is absolutely business critical. And that is sales cycle, shortening sales cycle. You've become almost a master at shortening the dreaded sales cycle now. What insights could you share with us? Because I'm sure there's going to be people listening here going, my sales cycles are just getting longer and longer and longer. I'm doing demo after demo after demo. They're changing the person I need to speak to. What insights could you share with them to help them shorten the sales cycle, you know, so they can get their cash in quicker?
Yeah, is a little bit older of a salesperson for my career. I think the basics, I'm shocked at how the basics are overlooked today, Gary. You know, making sure you're talking to the right people, the decision makers, the champions, identifying them out of the gate. Making sure, you know, you're aligned on budgets, right? Early conversations, like we said, about setting the right expectation. Our typical project, Mr. Customer, runs about this long and costs about this much. Are we still in the same, you know, ballpark here? So, the basic sales 101 stuff, it seems to be a forgotten art these days. That's part of the conversation and that builds relationship and trust. But the other thing I try to do, and I brought this back from my enterprise selling experience, is I almost always early on start to reverse engineer a close plan. And I don't necessarily call it a close plan. We can call it whatever. But I say to our prospect, you know, from the conversations we're looking at, we can't even get this started until this date. And these are the dependencies we have to accomplish in between their contracts, discoveries, negotiations, you know, whatever it may be. So I try to create a close plan, or a timeline is maybe a more accurate way to say it, on how we get to contracts. And I find that if you help the customer, bigger organizations have it built in inherently, but the middle market, if you help the middle market fill a plan out on how we get from point A to point B, it's much appreciated. And also they'll start working off of a faster cadence.
Yeah, that makes total sense, doesn't it? Again, it's like helping them buy. If you can actually help them buy, they'll look to buy from you because you're the only one showing them what they don't know.
I had a mentor and he used to say it all the time and it used to drive me nuts when I was younger, but now I can really appreciate it. He just said, make it easy for people to say yes.
So simple. You
know, yeah. A lot goes into it, but make it easy for people to say yes.
Yes. Well, I think certainly that's a really good point. And for those, obviously, this is a tech-based podcast for tech people. And one of the challenges that I see time and time again when it comes to closing sales, closing tech deals, is the overcomplication of the conversation. It's always about, or more than likely, product-led and service-led rather than results-orientated. And like you said, let's reverse engineer. What is the outcome that they want? What steps do they have to take in order to reach that outcome? And everything else is superfluous. We don't need that yet. So we don't need to know how long you spent on it and how great it is. And it does this, and what button does this, the red button and the green button does this. It's all about, what is the end result? What do they get? How quickly are they going to get it? Let's reverse engineer that for them to get it. So yeah, absolutely. Keeping it simple and not being so technically led on that sales comp. There's plenty of time for that afterwards, just not in that sales cycle from doing so. So talking about sales, I really want to get onto this topic as we draw to an end. Exit planning, reverse engineering, exit planning. You're a man after my own heart, because as you know, when I built my company, my company was purely built to sell, or for the option of selling. I built it with the intention that I wanted to have a certain valuation and I wanted it to sell at a certain point that gave me that choice. When we were speaking before, that was something very similar to what you did. So let's talk about that. Number one, first and foremost, why did you use that particular strategy, the sort of exit planning first strategy and then reverse engineer?
Yeah, so a couple of past things we've talked about here come into play. The pandemic was one of them. Me being able to slow down and think about strategic decisions at the very beginning of our journey. So that was part of it. And then also I had an opportunity to work for some Silicon Valley-based organization startups, right? And I saw how a good talent was recruited. I saw how good talent was retained in these startup incubators. I saw how over time, you know, the business strategy was changed and organizations would get ready for exit. And I've been part of, in my career, I've been part of 4 acquisitions and one divestiture. So I've rode through several acquisitions and I might've learned most in the divestiture, oddly enough, but I did. At the very beginning, I sat down with my partner and I said, hey, I think this journey looks like 8 to 10 years. Here's how we get to the peak. You and I talked about our passion for hiking and climbing. Here's how we get to the peak. And then here are the things we need to have in place to organize ourselves and get ready for exit. And so some of the things I did, Gary, during those early days, again, because the pandemic was in play and I could sit in front of my computer for 8 hours and plan on what professional employer organization or PEO did I want to have for our company, so that we were, as a small startup, we're offering great healthcare, dental, and vision, right? I got to have great benefits. How do I launch my 401k and my 401k match program? How do I start adding things like employee stock options? How do I start offering health and wellness benefits? Like, as a small company, we have a number of different benefits that I think make us ultra competitive to recruit the right kind of people and then retain them. That's where I am right now. Like, it's super important for me to retain the great talent that we've acquired over the years and built at. And then, you know, I'm doing all the things that you would imagine and that I think you probably did. I've been talking for a year plus to private equity. I've been talking for a year plus to organizations that are interested in acquiring, and I'm listening to what they're looking for in companies. You know, what does EBITDA need to look like? What is gross what does gross sales need to look like? What are they looking for as far as internal IP that we've built over the years, code libraries? We built our own time tracking system that we manage our business out of that was built on Salesforce. So, you know, just having gone through all those acquisitions, having worked with all those different startups, like you asked me at the beginning, I took the stuff that I really admired and respected. I tried to leave the stuff that I didn't like, the noise behind. And we just from day one tried to make ourselves an organization that's going to grow, but be very attractive for an acquiring partner down the road.
Yeah. And that's the key point, isn't it? It's the making. And I love it. You're almost doing requirements discovery with these people, just so you can start building your business to what they are looking for and their desired outcomes for those, as opposed to guessing what they would want, guessing what the valuation is going to be. This way you can actually start planning your business. And anyone who's listening here who may or maybe already be thinking about exiting their company, or if they're not, at least thinking about at some stage exiting the company. What Russ was just saying there is just absolute nuggets of gold. There is making sure your SOPs, your IPs, they're all in place. But more importantly, what is you as a person, as the CEO, as the founder's exit plan? Because, and I say this time and time again, the company is going to be worth less if they rely on you, because you have got to be exited as well. And so what they want to buy is not just your book of business, but your SOPs, your IPs, your systems that are ready so that they can just take over from there. And I do think, Russ, and probably, you know, I'd love to have your insight on this, founders do find it really hard, unless it's something like you and I have been thinking about for many years and doing, and this is how we planned our business. They find it hard to let go and just think, well, hold on a second, this is my baby, this is what I started, you know, and I've got to be still involved somehow. And that is just going to really harm their exit plans.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I'm struggling. I'll use the word struggling with that right now. I heard a statistic from a private equity firm that you can expect to get 1.5 to 2x the fair market value if you're not founder driven. Mm. So I picked up that data point, and I already knew that we needed to let our leaders and let our consultants who we trust do what we hired them to do. And for my partner and I to take our fingers out of the equation ever so gently, right? You have to do it slowly, but ever so gently. And so two things happen. One, I heard I'm learning from the people who might help us with an exit strategy one day, that we'll marginally be worth a lot more money if we're not founder driven. So that data point alone was a tipping point for me. But the other is what I'm struggling with now a little bit, just to be completely transparent, is the more and more I step out of the business, I ask myself, well, does the business need me? And so, right? And so, yes. And what I come to terms with is that's the wrong question to be asking, right? I, of course, was part of the startup to hiring, you know, so that's the wrong, it's imposter syndrome creeping in ever a little bit so gently. It's the wrong question to be asking. The right question to be asking is, what is my next phase of development as the leader of the organization, right? Mm-hmm. So challenging myself to a couple of my challenges this year are to expand my role, but to be on the board of other organizations. And then I'm bringing some consultants in to help us do employee stock options this year and stuff like that. But I guess my point is, it is scary to kind of remove yourself. But if you've done things accurately, the only way you can find out if things can run without you is to just trust the people that you've hired to do that. Hire the right people, but once you have, trust them. And they're almost screaming, by the way, your employees, my employees, are almost screaming to be given that responsibility. They're asking for it, right? So you gotta check your ego. You gotta, you know, review the state of play, but you just gotta take the leap of faith. And kind of slowly remove yourself, but create new roles for yourself, like new roles to take the organization to whatever that next is.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic piece of advice. And, you know, as you say, create new roles for that. That's not something we tend to hear. That's a brand new piece of advice here from Russ, you know, because, yeah, you are going to feel your identity gone. If you're removing yourself, this is your identity. A whole part of you leaves. But I love what you said, though. Create other roles for you that's not necessarily part of the driven side of that business. And you're right. And we all know this, within the industry, if you're 10, 15 million, even up to that level, it's still generally founder-led sales, founder-led strain. And once you start getting past that level, you got to start thinking, yes, as you say, get the right people in and then get them doing what you got them in to do. So that you can do other things, you know, as opposed to babysitting them. That's not what you got them in to do. They're not meant to be mini yous. They're meant to be striving on their own so that you have a better exit from that. You know, so great piece of advice there from Russ. So listen, Russ, you know, thank you so much for sharing all this advice. It's been an absolute overload of insights and nuggets. It's been absolutely fantastic. So I've got one question for you as we wrap this up is, I call it the younger self question, you know. So knowing what you now know, you know, and based upon your direction of where you're going and the struggles that you're dealing with today, if you could give your younger self one piece of advice when you first started, or you were in the career that you're in before you started Radiant, what would it be?
I have wanted to start my own company probably for 25, 30 years, right? I was an entrepreneur in my head before I even realized it. So my one piece of advice to my younger self is do not make fear-based decisions. And I would, every time I wanted to do something like go for a position that I thought was beyond my skill set or start a company or do something very aggressive that was part of my dreams and hopes, I would convince myself based out of fear, or inexperience, right? You don't have to use the fear word if you're not comfortable, but inexperience, I would talk myself out of it. Lean into your fears, lean into your goals. We are capable of doing great things. There's plenty of support out there. People like you, your podcast. I have 2-3 mentors going at all times. I try to mentor several people, when I'm privileged to be asked. Time is short, man. And I wish I would have done that. Although I'm so proud of what we're doing, it's the most professionally fulfilling thing I've ever done. I wish I would have done it 10 years ago. Because when we do exit and things are past here, I think I'm going to do it again. And I wish I would have got started on this journey earlier, but that's it.
Yeah. Oh, man. I tell you, you have just brought the biggest smile. I don't know if you can tell. I'm a very expressive person. You know, and so when I'm exited, and I've never heard anyone say that before, even though I know they will, but you've just nailed it. When I exit, it's not final because I'm going to go and do it again. I love it. I'm so privileged to be an operator, owner, and build something, an asset. I've sold it. I'm going to do it again. I'm going to just build it again until you don't want to build it again. You know, it's absolutely brilliant. I can't control my grin. I think it's an absolutely lovely piece of advice to people. So listen, Russ, if people want to get hold of you, they want to do business with you, what's the best way of getting hold of you?
You can go to our website, radianhub.com, RadianHub.com. You'll find on LinkedIn, you can find my profile. I put my phone and email address on there. I try to be very accessible. So, and then off of our website, contact us, you can reach out to me. So I would love to field any questions or have any conversations that might come out.
Well, that's fantastic and very kind of you. I'll make sure that those details are in the show notes below so people can just do a one click and get straight through to you. So thank you very much, Russ. It's been an absolute honor. Thank you for sharing the insights and expertise. You know, we could keep on talking, but, you know, time prevails and it is what it is. But it's been an absolute pleasure having you here today. Thank you again for sharing.
Thank you, Gary. It was a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. And thank you guys for listening to us and joining us. And I'm sure you've got a ton of insights from Russ. And if you've got one or two or many, please make sure you do one of four things or all four if you can. Just make sure you comment. Let us know what you liked so we can continue bringing more of the stuff to you. Make sure you do like it. Make sure you subscribe so you can get more. But more importantly, you know the philosophy here is make sure you share. Make sure you share this with as many people as you can so that they too, like you and I and Russ, can grow successful businesses in tech. Until the next episode, thank you very much for joining. We'll see you all soon. Bye-bye. Bye, Russ.